Consequence Podcast Network.
For a Hey Iconic Army, we are here today for a highly anticipated episode. We have heard your requests, and so we are here to talk about BTS's company, HYBE. In this episode, we hope to bring you a lot of interesting facts and informative discussions on the company's history, their expansion, and their public perception, but we are not here to discuss this alone.
No, today we are so excited to introduce our friends Sam and Kals as special guests joining us to share their perspectives and expertise on this topic. They're both iconics who we've gotten to know over the years as friends. We got to meet up with them both at Hobiepalooza in 2022 and have chatted with them at many iconic hangouts. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Could you each please share a little bit more about yourself, why you're interested in this topic of HYBE, and how you became ARMY?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm Sam. I'm an astronomer, currently a postdoctoral researcher, and I study star formation on large and small scales. I'm 31. I became an ARMY in the fall of 2020, so pandemic ARMY. Dynamite caught me, but blood, sweat, and tears kept me in the fandom. I'm interested in this topic. I'm a researcher by profession, so I've been following the kind of recent HYBE conflict with Minhee-jin. And I just got really interested in how information was being used to sway public opinion. And so I've just been keeping on top of the situation.
I'm Kals. I am a venture capital investor. So I run a VC fund, which basically invests in early stage technology companies in emerging markets. By being an investor, I'm really interested in kind of the business side of most things. And so being an investor, but also an ARMY is kind of what brought me to being super interested when HYBE first went public, but also just the business behind all of it, because I think Bang PD is a really interesting founder, visionary, but also with all the controversy that's been happening, that's also been really interesting to me of why public companies often seem to fall apart when it comes to things like this. So that's what brought me here. I'm 42 and I became an ARMY in February of 2020. So right before the pandemic. So I actually fell in love with them because of their performance of On and Grand Central Station on the Fallon show. And then just completely, because then the pandemic happened, went completely rabbit holing into the land that we all love as ARMY. And I met Sam because we were both fellow iconics, and she's become such a dear friend of mine thanks to you guys. But also we talk about this topic a lot just between the two of us. So it's really fun to be on the show with her as well.
Yeah, we love that you guys met through the podcast. And like, I mean, seriously, what a great time to get into BTS right during the pandemic. Clearly iconics, we have some great people here with us today to speak on this topic and dive in.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I've never been this nervous in my life.
Greetings from Longtime No See the Podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Welcome back. We're your hosts. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany. And this is Stanning BTS,
your favorite informative fangirl podcast.
All right. Well, today we are going to hang out for about an hour. And like we said, we're going to be talking about BTS's company, Hive. We're going to be diving into the business side of things. We're going to be looking at the public perception. And so really looking forward to this episode because our guests are just so, so knowledgeable on these topics.
Before we get too far into today's episode, we want to say thanks, Iconics, for being here and for supporting us. We would love to see you at this month's Iconic Hangout, which will be on Monday, February 24th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can join our Patreon for $5 a month and get the link there. This month, in honor of his birthday, we will be playing J-Hope Jeopardy. So it's always really fun when we play Jeopardy. We hope that you guys join and play along with us.
Yes, really looking forward to the Jeopardy. It's going to get competitive, but it's going to be so much fun. So thank you all for being here, for all of your support, and of course, for listening.
Okay, let's go ahead and dive into the topic at hand. We really wanted to start by expressing why we are interested in talking about HYBE. As fans, we've always had some personal interest in HYBE, and many listeners have requested that we talk about the ins and outs of BTS's company because it does seem like it's changed so much. Since 2020, HYBE has really been a topic of interest for ARMYs, and we're curious to take a look at the evolution from Big Hit, how Big Hit grew, and then how it became HYBE. And of course, this is such an integral part of BTS's story. Curiosity was sparked by a lot of ARMYs in 2020 because Big Hit transitioned into a public company that year, and ARMY really noticed the changes that came with that. In my mind, a big change that I always remember, I think this happened in 2021, but the change from the intro of their music videos from Music and Artists for Healing into We Believe in Music. That was like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is so different. And that was, you know, that intro, Music and Artists for Healing, was something that we really clung to for a long time and appreciated. So, you know, that's one of the small changes, but there's many changes that we are excited to talk about and really dive into today.
Yeah, another reason why ARMY is pretty curious about HYBE is also because Big Hit traditionally fostered that parasocial relationship between fans and the artists. So this made us as fans innately interested in the company and not just the artists. We also have always felt like the company was on our side too, just because they seem to be on the artist side. The original slogan, like Kayla was saying, the Music and Artists for Healing, was a sign of that, that the company seemed very interested and invested in the artists as artists. Bang Shiyuk also really supported BTS and encouraged them to explore the personal topics that they were going through in their music, which made us respect him a lot as a CEO. A lot of us have also been very invested in just BTS's story and BTS's origins. Big Hit was that small, unheard of company. So we as fans had always heard about like SM, YG, JYP being the big three. And Big Hit was just this like little nobody company. And so not only was BTS working from nothing, Big Hit was working from nothing as well. So just as fans, we've kind of supported and cheered on the company and the company's success as well. So at least to say, we all as ARMYs have one of our reasons to be interested in knowing more about HYBE and their journey.
For sure. It's definitely something that is an integral part of the BTS and the ARMY story is the company that supports it all. We do want to say a quick little legal disclaimer before we get more into Big Hit and HYBE. The following discussion is just for informational and entertainment purposes only. None of us are financial advisors, investment professionals, or affiliated with HYBE in any capacity. And the views expressed here are solely our own based on publicly available info, and they do not reflect official statements from HYBE or any related entities. Nothing in this discussion should be taken as investment advice, and we also encourage listeners to conduct their own research before making financial decisions. We do not own HYBE stock or have any financial stake in the company. This conversation is intended to explore public perception and industry trends, not to provide an exhaustive analysis of HYBE's business practices. So just don't take anything that we say here as the, you know, the word and the law here. Make your own decisions and be a wise and informed consumer. We do want to just give you guys a brief history and background of Big Hit and how it progressed eventually into HYBE. So Big Hit was started by Bang Shiyuk, And he was a hit producer at JYP, one of the big three K-pop companies. Over the years, his responsibilities grew to a point where it wasn't sustainable for him anymore. He just really didn't have work-life balance. It was too much on his shoulders. He spoke with JYP about his concerns, and the two came to an agreement that it was time for Bang Si-hyuk to move on. He struck out on his own with all of his knowledge and expertise that he had gained over the years to start Big Hit, with JYP as a primary early investor. We also know that JYP at the time loaned him trainees from his company, which is how J-Hope became a part of Big Hit. Very cool beginnings there, but I know that there was a lot more to the private investors and what they raised later on in 2018 to kind of keep going. And Kals, I think that you know more on that topic.
Yeah, and for anyone that wants to read more about the story of Big Hit, I really recommend Harvard Business School did a case study on them, and it's super interesting and goes really deep into a lot of this. But what I think is really interesting is that, you know, this is a company that Bang Si-hyuk started in 2005, but really with kind of the same formula, the same approach that JYP had, and it wasn't something that was working. And so from 2005 to 2011, they were running kind of a failing company for a long time. And what I find really interesting is that they kind of took a pause in 2011 to say, what are we doing wrong? What can we do differently? And really kind of listen to the feedback that they were receiving. And that's really where everything changed, right? Where we started to see the big hit that we knew with BTS, like that's really when that started, where they kind of placed the artists and the fans at the center of everything and really thought through about like fostering trust between artists and the company, changing the format of training life and not just focusing on the singing about the artists, but about the whole artists themselves, the physical, their mental well-being, and realize that, you know, they needed mentors, all these things about taking a more holistic approach to the artists and putting them at the center of things. And I thought that was super interesting because, you know, that's so different from, you know, typical Korean society, typical Korean entertainment company. So really subversive in their approach. And obviously that approach led to what was so unique at the time of launching and the birth of BTS, right? Which as ARMY, as we know, as all of us know about the history, was such a game changer, not just for Big Hit, but, you know, for the world, and not just for K-pop, for the world. So to give you guys a sense of what that impact had then on the business of Big Hit by making this change and with BTS on the rise, in 2011, they did about $6 million in revenue with about 20 to 30 employees. For those who don't know, maybe $6 million sounds like a lot, but actually that really meant that the company was almost bankrupt just because of how much it took to do what they were doing. They, in 2016, did $29 million in revenue with 50 to 60 employees. So that was when, you know, Bang PD said that they started to just turn a sustained profit at that point. And then in 2019, they did about $489 million revenue, which is about 80 times what they did before. So just this huge, massive jump. And you just saw this huge growth that happened. And part of that, you know, was investment that we're going to talk about. But a lot of that was because of BTS, as we all know, as ARMY. And they actually, because they saw that rise in the growth and could really attribute it back to themselves, when they renegotiated their contracts in 2018, they said they would give Big Hit seven more years, but said, hey, give us the acknowledgement we deserve and have it reflected in the contract, which is so cool, that the kind of power that they really wielded at that time.
I think that is so fascinating. And I'm also just like, it's admirable of BTS to say, hey, yes, we're appreciative of you as a company, but we brought a lot of this value. Like, I mean, 80 times, to grow 80 times in that time span is immense. That's huge. So, but I do think that it's super unique in that Big Hit took this different approach with them and cared so much about their well-being. I think that really says how much that the company cared about their trainees and cared about their artists. So yeah, I think it's really great to see why, with all of the success that BTS decided to pursue and re-sign their contract with Big Hit after this. And so, Kals, I know you know a lot more about what happened with the company following the renewal of BTS's contract.
Yeah. And so much of, you know, what I just mentioned, in 2019, they did $489 million in revenue. A lot of that could be attributed to BTS and just the organic growth of the company. But a lot of it was actually because they raised significant investment in 2018 because of the goals that they had, right? They wanted to do market expansion, all this investment, thinking about, you know, bringing in other groups and diversifying. So all of those things were already in the works in 2018, and it's really why we saw that growth. And so from the research that we did, you know, with Bang PD eventually knowing that he wanted this company to go public, you know, to be listed on the stock exchange. In order to do that, they needed to inject a lot of capital into the business. And so in 2018, it was the first time that they raised capital. They actually raised it from three private equity firms. I mentioned before, I work in venture capital. Private equity is similar investment, but a little bit differently. They invest in, you know, bigger scale companies, ones they want, definitely want to go public for sure. And they apparently raised about $284 million before they went public on the Korean Stock Exchange in October 2020. So that's a lot of capital that was injected. It's also what led to things like they acquired 50% of Pledis, which is, you know, obviously the company where Seventeen is under, you know, Cause Entertainment, a few other companies. And all of that drove the value of the company up. It drove their revenue up. And all of that is really what led to them, you know, going IPO, which IPO is initial public offering, right? When a company is listed on the stock exchange for the first time, what that price is. And so that all led to all of that. And it's quite interesting, you know, when you kind of unpack that, realizing that their vision and the journey to it was so fast, right? To see a company that was started in 2005, was almost bankrupt in 2011, to then be at the stage where they were at, where it was actually considered the largest IPO in South Korea since 2017 is massive.
That's really, really insane, honestly. Like, we already talked about the 80 times growth, but just thinking about that incredible leap of success in such a short amount of time. I guess I have a question of like what that benefit of going public is. You said that they had the goal of going public, building that capital from the private equity firms to be able to go public. So what is that benefit for a company to go from a private company to a public company?
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to it, right? And I think for investors that invest in a company when it's still private, like for me as an investor, if I was to invest in it, or any of us, if we were all investors that invested in Big Hit before when they were private, we invested when the company was worth a certain amount. And that amount and that value is never quite realized until you have an exit event, right? So a company can become acquired for a certain price higher, like 5x from when you came in, like five times more than the value of when you invested, and that's your exit. When you list on the stock exchange, that's another path to exit. And obviously, that's when you sell your shares to the public. And the value of going public specifically, and especially on the Korean Stock Exchange, is that you're able to raise a lot more capital, right? And given the vision and this, and we were talking about it, the shift of, you know, the rebrand to Hive actually happened in 2021. So soon after October 2020 was when they went public. In 2021 is when they did the rebrand, but we could see the shift in strategy and the desire to do market expansion, to, like, you know, go beyond just doing, you know, direct artist involvement and doing other things. And so they will continue to need to raise a lot of capital. And so going public made the most sense. We also know that the other major entertainment companies in the K-pop industry are all public already, right? And so that was the most viable path for them. And obviously for the guys that invested in Big Hit in those five rounds that I mentioned before October 2020, they probably made a great exit at the time. So that's really the reason that they probably decided to do it. And just given the vision that we can see and all the acquisitions that they've made since then, including Ithaca Holdings, which happened after they went public. And I think I saw a number that they acquired them for about $1 billion or something, or valued at $1 billion. And so you need that kind of money and that kind of capital behind you in order to do those things.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So it seems like it was just the natural route to end up eventually going public as a company. During all of this time frame too, though, it just seemed that Big Hit was growing so exponentially. Like, it was just they grew so much in such a short amount of time right there at the end. So it seems that this is about when Bang Chiyuk was taking on so many new responsibilities and just a lot more on his plate. So it was hard for him to kind of balance that work and what the new motivations were as they were going public and just the growth of the company. So it seems like this is when Hitman Bang ended up saying, I need to take a step back, like, from being the CEO of the company. And he ended up going into the role as just being a chairman for what we know as Hive now. And so he is a chairman now. But Sam, I know you know more about the succeeding CEOs for Hive and some of their background information.
Yeah, so the first like CEO of Hive that they brought in was Park Ji-won. And he was actually previously the CEO of Nexon Korea, which was a video game developer there. So he had more of a tech background. When they brought him in, he really helped kind of spearhead the development of Hive's multi-label system. So he was there when they were acquiring all like the labels that they now have under Hive. So like Pledis and Cause and the other ones. He ran that for several years and only stepped down last year in 2024. Unfortunately, I think the last months of his tenure as CEO were kind of marred recently by the recent dispute, an ongoing dispute with Minhee Jin. But overall, like, he really did kind of help spearhead this huge growth of Hive and the multi-label system that I think has been a real game changer for Hive, and then also just going from Big Hit to Hive in general. They also, under his tenure, kind of really built up Weverse, developed infrastructure to hold massive online concerts, and recently have been delving into AI technologies, specifically for translations on Weverse and things like that. But last year, they did announce that they were bringing on a new CEO, whose name is Lee Jae-sung. Previously worked with Hyundai and Google, but actually joined Big Hit as their chief innovation and growth officer in 2018. So he was affiliated with Big Hit before Hive was created, and then has worked after Hive was created, worked as the chief strategy officer for Hive, moved to Hive America as the COO, and then Hive America president, and then moved back to be Hive's chief strategy officer again, and then was selected as the new CEO. So he has a huge knowledge of both Big Hit and Hive and that transition. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see where they want to take this transition for what they're calling like Hive 2.0 now.
Yeah, it's really cool that they started with the CEO that had more of a tech background to kind of diversify where they were putting their hands and, you know, different things that they were exploring to continue to build up the company instead of just K-pop acts and artists. They could work on the tech side too. And it seems like they kind of met their goals in that and really expanded in that. And now it's time to bring in that CEO that has more history with the company. I think it's really cool that he has history with them before Hive. You know, he can really see that growth over time. It will be very cool to see kind of like the changes that he brings on here at this point. Since becoming Hive, they've continued to expand, like you guys already spoke about, bringing labels underneath them. We kind of talk about in the podcast the Hive umbrella and kind of all of the different companies that are beneath Hive that they've acquired over this time. There's so many labels that are underneath them. Of course, Big Hit Music is one of their primary labels under their division. Of course, BTS is still technically with Big Hit as a sub-label underneath Hive, but it is just an interesting time for all of their labels here. Like, Hive also has Source Music, Sam, you mentioned Pledis Entertainment, B-Lift Lab, Cause Entertainment, Geffen Records, and then like Cal's mentioned, they also expanded into the U.S. and acquired Ithaca Records, and they set up a headquarters here, creating that Hive America that Hive's current CEO worked with for a while. So just very interesting. Sam, I know that you had some knowledge about the Big Hit shares and how they are kind of owned and maintained.
Yeah, I did a little bit of research because I was interested, because I think as fans, we have this idea, and there's this kind of, it goes around in like online fan circles and stuff, that that Big Hit and BTS are somehow separate and special in terms of the umbrella of HYBE labels. And they are to some extent, because Big Hit obviously was the very first label under HYBE. And originally when HYBE was formed, they didn't have like a separate label for BTS, TXT, Lee Hyun, you know, like they were, I mean, obviously the original Big Hit artists, but they at that time, because they hadn't acquired the other labels, they didn't have like a separate label. But once they started acquiring other labels, they created Big Hit Music. And they made sure that all the shares of Big Hit are owned by HYBE so that no outside shareholders or board of directors can have direct influence over Big Hit. So in that sense, that is really like the difference between Big Hit versus like Source Music or Pledis or B-Lift, who have other like board of directors or shareholders that own certain part of the company. HYBE owns the majority share of them, but they do have other shareholders. So I think it's, you know, while Big Hit is a little bit insulated, functionally, they kind of are run similarly to the other labels where they have complete control creatively, but they, like the logistics and stuff, are still handled by HYBE. So like staffing, hair and makeup, social media, that's still all handled by HYBE, just as the other labels are.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating to know, because I think a lot of ARMYs have questions around like, we have ENHYPEN, which is under HYBE, but it's under B-List, which I know that they have their shareholders, which I don't know. I feel like there's been discussion about them being fully acquired by HYBE, but they were part of, I forgot what other entertainment company was also invested in them. So it's just interesting to know that, that Big Hit is 100% owned by HYBE and that there's nothing else, no one else involved in it. So yeah, it's just really fascinating to see the expansion and like all of these different, like we said, like the umbrella and having all of these different labels. I feel that this has sparked a lot of controversy, at least in terms of HYBE America and what's happened with HYBE America in terms of the acquiring Ithaca Holdings and the relationship with Scooter Braun. I know that when people saw like Hitman Bang standing there with Scooter Braun, there was a lot of mixed feelings, especially for ARMYs who are also Swifties, because of a lot of just that reputation that Scooter Braun has of being just this bully, kind of cutthroat in the music industry. And of course, just that whole history with Taylor Swift that I think still continues on to this day. He is currently the CEO of HYBE America, but it just goes to show that there's this East and to the West expansion, which Cals, you had talked to us before about, like, this is really rare to see. Usually it's West to East. And so it's just fascinating to see how, I mean, like the level of success and growth that HYBE and influence HYBE has had over into the West now too.
Yeah, I think it's cool because I think HYBE is doing it differently than pretty much anyone in the music industry globally, right? So just whether it's East to West, it's that in itself, like the way that they're approaching things is so interesting, even in terms of how they've given BTS members shares.
Yeah, we know that when HYBE became a company, that BTS automatically got shares in the company. That was part of their deal. And so BTS have invested as stockholders, and we're wondering what level of say does that bring them in HYBE as shareholders, as people that, you know, we attribute so much of Big Hit's initial success to BTS's success. How does that bleed into their, their control in HYBE, if any? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I think I've been really defensive of BTS members being like, you know, they don't have as much power as people, you know, fans seem to get very angry about why BTS members aren't doing more, but I think as I researched it a little bit more, it's quite fascinating, their own journey with the shareholding, because it's also not straightforward. So at the time that HYBE went public in October 2020, each BTS member was given 68,385 shares. This is significant because this is something that we haven't seen anywhere, right? For artists to be given shares in their company is really showing that acknowledgement of what BTS has meant and how intrinsic they've been to the success of Big Hit. So that in itself is quite extraordinary and really significant. I think over time, over the last few years since 2020, you know, members have sold some of their shares. Like, obviously, they wanted to get cash out if they needed it. There was some interesting reports of people saying BTS was selling all of their shares. And I think maybe that was also fired up by fans that wanted them to sell their shares that were angry at HYBE. But everything that I found is that they actually continue to have a significant amount of the shares that they were given, even if some of them own a little bit less than before. But collectively, they still only have about 1.15% of HYBE. That's the most recent confirmed figure. In contrast, Bang PD owns about 31.5%, which makes him the largest individual shareholder of HYBE. And what's interesting here is that, you know, 1% doesn't really seem like a lot, but they actually do have voting rights now, which is not something they had before when they were first initially given shares of HYBE. So before November 2023, they were considered special shareholders with limited decision-making power, and they'd actually delegated their voting rights to Bang PD. And those contracts actually ended in November 2023, and now the members can individually exercise voting rights. So I think that's what's really interesting here, is that it's not a significant amount, but it's not insignificant either, right? Just the fact that they have voting rights that is more than they had before, all of those things are really interesting developments and really shows the power that they still have at the table.
Yeah, so I really want to dive into this because I think it's so interesting, the idea of them having voting rights. But before we get into that, I want to know, do you know approximately how much of HYBE's revenue is from BTS's sales? I feel like that's a big point of topic for a lot of ARMYs. They want to know exactly how much BTS brings to the company just by themselves. And does that mean anything in terms of their decision-making at HYBE? And then also, like, I guess if you could just expand upon what it means to have voting rights, that now that they have voting rights and since 2023, is what you said.
Yeah, since November 2023. You know, so the latest numbers that I found was that up until late 2022, BTS was still projected to contribute between 60 to 70% of HYBE's revenue, which is significant, obviously. It gave them substantial leverage in company decisions because of their importance for HYBE's financial success. So even if it, voting aside, right, it's like BTS, if they were to walk away, would be a significant loss for HYBE. And what we've seen when you look at the stock prices, right? So I think what's important for people that are involved in the stock market, and what I also suggest to people is, like, sometimes it's really interesting even as an individual to, like, you know, if you buy a little bit of Apple stock, you'll notice on certain days if, like, Apple's earnings come out, right, like the stock price goes up, right? So much of this is about investor confidence. It's about perceptions, market perceptions, certain events happening. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more on the negative side. But what's interesting here is that we've seen how the return has had a positive impact on stock prices. So when Jin and J-Hope returned from the military, and then also because of the conversation around the upcoming full group return, the anticipation around it in 2025, rumors about, you know, an album coming out this year, but also potentially a tour in 2026, even if they're not substantiated yet, have actually attributed to stock prices going up for HYBE. So on February 12, 2025, their stock reached a 52-week high of 250,000 Korean won, which is up 1.83% from the previous day. And the announcement of Hobi's solo tour caused an increase in stock prices on January 10th. As an example, that announcement made the price jump 7.2%, which is actually the biggest surge since November 2024. So all of those things kind of give you a sense of just the impact that BTS continues to have on HYBE.
Yeah, just before going into research and record this, Kayla was joking, like, oh, we're so invested in BTS at this point and we can predict when things are happening. Maybe we should be investing just because we know when these prices are probably going to jump. Yeah, super, super interesting stuff. I love seeing these numbers, especially just seeing the influence and the impact of BTS members coming back from the military. So interesting. And then lastly, Kals, if you could just expand on what those voting rights exactly mean, what that means for BTS.
Yeah, so with their voting rights, because obviously before they didn't have direct say, right? They also had delegated that out. Now they can actually participate in major company decisions independently. They have a direct say in HYBE's business strategies, their operations. What I find the most interesting is the company can no longer impose decisions on the group without their input. So it gives them more control over their career, the direction of their activities within Hybe. I think it could be argued that they probably had, you know, at least the modicum of that control before, but that's very much established now. And then they have, you know, while they have direct influence through their voting rights, I think the overall impact on Hybe's decision-making process is a combination of not just their shareholding and their revenue contribution, but also just their status. I mean, the contribution of BTS as like part of the Hybe brand, it's like the biggest part of Hybe's brand, continues to be today. That in itself is so much power. So shareholding aside, voting rights aside, that's what they bring to the table. And I think that's what's most interesting.
I think as ARMY, we love to hear that. We love to hear that.
Yes, and we're not biased at all, of course.
Right, I mean. But it feels like, you know, they have way more control over their individual careers, their group careers, and like the trajectory that they want to go. And I know, like, I mean, we all go back to Festa 2022 and see this group that is, you know, almost in shambles. They have lost their direction. They've, you know, some of them kind of lost their passion. They're in big need of a hiatus and a break and like finding that creativity flow again. And so knowing that, you know, in 2023, by the time that contract expired and they were able to get voting rights, that gives them more autonomy within the company for the choices that they make as a group and as individuals. And I think that's something that will be really, really exciting to see when they all return from the military, just like kind of the direction that they want to take. Correct me if I'm totally off base here. Yeah.
No, you're totally right. But I was just thinking that it's so interesting that when you think about the fact that regardless, you know, of their voting rights, like when you watch each of their solo careers of what they did individually and their individual colors, like they had so much power in being able to do exactly what they wanted to do. And I think that is such a, that shows, and that's the manifestation of like who they are, right? Is that they were able to not just who they are as a group and how they come together in that voting, the power that they were able to show when, you know, RM was able to do, you know, his album and it be something that was so singular, and same with, you know, every single one of them, it was so them. That in itself is power, right? That is demonstrated to us.
Right. Each of them doing something so different and so unique to them as the individual, and also being wildly successful at doing it was an amazing adventure to see and to enjoy during this like enlistment time. It's going to be really fun to see kind of how they all take that individuality and that growth that they've had as artists, as solo artists, and bring that back together as a group post-service. We also are interested, as far as Hybe goes itself, we kind of talked about with the CEOs, how the CEOs have focused on different things. We just are interested in the sources of Hybe's money flow. It's can't just be purely from artists. Artists are huge, you know, like touring and selling albums and selling special, you know, events and photo books and everything is obviously some great income, but they've also acquired those labels we spoke about. They went from a single to a multi-label. They have those other Hybe solutions of like content where they're developing different content and IP and different platforms like Weverse. So we're just really interested in what you guys know about how they're diversifying their profits and that additional money flow that doesn't just come from the artists.
Yeah. And I think one value of a company being public is that we get access to all this information, right? I think when you are a public company, your earnings, your quarterly earnings are posted for everyone to see. So people get access to this a lot. A lot of people comment on this online, a lot of people who don't have a lot of knowledge or understanding of this. So we also see like a lot of misinformation out there. But if you were to what you were just saying, Kayla, you know, it's really broken down. And when they rebranded as Hybe, they really focus on labels, solutions, and platform. And so they've, you know, they've diversified their profits by investing in technology. I think, Sam, you were talking about that as well. So Hybe 2.0 in 2024 is really about introducing technology-driven growth areas like gaming and AI. They want to innovate the future of entertainment. They also invested $80 million in their gaming business that drove their value up, which is super interesting. Just how they're thinking beyond just kind of that, you know, kind of the more traditional approach in the music business and seeing themselves as something that's way beyond just a music business. And so Hybe Solutions works on creating specialized content for video, videos, games, learning, and IP, intellectual property. And then, you know, Sam, you were talking about Weverse and the profits from streaming. So what's interesting here is that even now, artist direct involvement, so like recorded music, all of that has remained Hybe's largest revenue source. So that still continues today. But indirect activities, which is like Weverse, so platform of what they were talking about before, merchandising, demonstrated stronger growth, which is about 15 to 31% year-on-year growth, which is stronger growth than, you know, artist direct involvement. And so that shows that this approach, the strategy that they're employing is actually not, it's kind of proving their hypothesis, right? It's like, let's mitigate the risk here and not just concentrate just on artist direct involvement, but let's start to diversify the business out. And just being able to show that growth, you know, you're able to show that they're, this is actually proving out.
Do you think that they chose this route of the indirect activities and really explored and expanding on them in anticipation for BTS's enlistment and the probable dip in the revenues from BTS not touring and performing and everything?
100%. I mean, that's why all the labels, multi-labels, so many artists underneath this, right? It's like when you have this behemoth of one, like I would think if I was an investor in this company, the biggest risk is BTS going to the military, right? And so if I was investing back as a private equity investor, if I had come in on that round in 2018 and I knew that in a couple of years BTS was going to go to the military, I was going to say, like, you better make damn sure that you were going to diversify and mitigate the risk here. And what I think is interesting is that Bang PD didn't actually diversify the risk in the most traditional way. He didn't just say the labels, right? So what Sam was talking about before, he said, we're going to invest in gaming. We're actually going to really put more money into building out this platform, thinking about merchandising, all this stuff and AI, like, and really think about the future of music. And I think that's really what makes him, you know, we're going to be talking about a lot of faults here too in a couple of minutes, but I think that to me is what makes him such a visionary, is that he was actually thinking about what's the future and not just like a music company, but what is the future of the industry and how do we actually, you know, think about innovating ahead of everybody else.
Yeah. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense now why Park Ji-won is the CEO that followed Bang Si-hyuk. It sounds like he was really thinking about, oh, BTS are eventually potentially going to serve in the military. How can we go different routes of creating revenue? And it's interesting to hear just how successful it has been with Weverse and merchandising. I didn't know that they were that successful with getting revenue through those routes. And so I could see why they continue to pursue that direction. So kind of just moving along here, I want to talk about these shareholder meetings. I know Sam has a lot of great information on this because these are those meetings I always hear people talk about them online about just the Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, you know, what is Hybe up to? And they have these public meetings and we hear just for, you know, the investors, we get a general idea of what the company is planning to do, what their plans are. And the fact that it's so public, we get to see more insight on what exactly goes on within the corporation.
Yeah. So not being a shareholder myself, I actually found this content creator on YouTube called Hybe Boy. And I know maybe some of the listeners also have seen his videos on YouTube. They're really informative, and he tends to do a lot of translations of articles that are published in Korea and he'll translate them into English, so you can learn a lot more detail about things like this. And he is a minor shareholder in Hybe, so he has a few shares in Hybe, and so he is very open and transparent about like what the shareholder meetings are like and what it, you know, what it's like to be kind of following along this path and like what it's been recently as a shareholder of Hybe. And so on YouTube, he has a really interesting kind of story about like the extraordinary shareholder meeting that was held last September. And of course, if you think about what was happening last September, like there was a lot of kind of upheaval in Hybe shares because of the situation with Adore and Minhee Jin. And so I thought it was really interesting that despite that, and then the kind of rocky kind of path that the shares, that the stocks were taking with HYBE. They certainly were not going up at the time, but even with that kind of like uncertainty in the stock prices, like there still were not very many people in attendance at this shareholder meeting. And traditionally, like meat companies in Korea don't share a lot of details with their stockholders. They don't want to overwhelm them. So HYBE Voice says, like, in general, like, obviously this is, you know, not true for every person, but in general, people who buy stocks are not super invested in the companies. They kind of just watch the stock market, buy, sell, pretty kind of casually. And so the companies don't want to overwhelm those shareholders. And so they tend to like not share, like at these meetings, they won't go super into the depth about things. They might just kind of keep to a very specific meeting agenda, and then they don't go beyond that. And it's somewhat true for HYBE. So it varies. So at the shareholder meeting last September, they kind of took that approach because they're trying to mitigate risk with the ongoing conflict. But in general, they tend to be more kind of open, and they'll tend to share more details. But I thought that was interesting that HYBE tends to be more transparent with their shareholders. But because they do have like HYBE and then HYBE America and then now YX Labels, which is formerly HYBE Japan, they kind of tailor their interactions with their shareholders to each of those kind of like regional areas. But I did think it was interesting that even though it was so kind of rocky last September, there's still, I think HYBE Voice said there were 8 people in attendance at this extraordinary general shareholders meeting. And so that kind of tells you about like how people, maybe even if the numbers were a little bit rocky, people still had a lot of confidence in HYBE at the time. And they weren't like going to come and like yell at the CEO about the conflict going on. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Find that fascinating. Do you at all know how many people generally are at these shareholder meetings?
I don't think there's actually a lot of people that go.
Like, really?
It sounds like it's kind of just like they'll have some people are reporters. So they'll report on what's going on. And then they have, I think he said there were three reporters of the 8 people there. And then he said a few of them were likely company employees who are allowed to buy stocks and be shareholders. Mm-hmm. So it was not a very big crowd at all. But yeah, he said that's like fairly typical. And it's definitely not like, it's not held at the HYBE building. So there's no like people coming to try and sneak a peek of the idols. It's held, you know, at a different building location. So
yeah, which is smart.
It's not, yeah, it's not like they're going to try and go see their, like if you buy stocks in HYBE, you can like get a peek of that, your favorite idol right at the shareholder meeting. That's definitely not happening.
It would be chaos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that obviously it's smart to have a strategy in terms of appealing towards, you know, being more transparent with like HYBE America, where there is a little bit more transparency and they're more public with what they are doing, and then to have a little bit less. And then especially with the whole situation going on with the door and Minhinji, like everything that's gone on there. So I think that's a good kind of segue into getting more into just what has gone on in terms of like the controversy. Like HYBE really hasn't had too much of controversy, but with Adore and Min Hee Jin and how that all has affected stock prices and also HYBE's public image.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like, you know, it's definitely Min Hee Jin's tactic was to do this, right? It was like put a lot of stuff out in the media to influence. Like the way you hurt HYBE is by hurting the perception of HYBE, right? And hurting the potential strength of the company. And so I think that's what's interesting. But I think where it raised the most amount of doubts, like to what Sam said, is like not a lot of people showed up. It did cause like things to go up and down. But overall, as we've seen, HYBE is still outperforming every other entertainment company. It's actually, its market cap, which is the value of the company, is significantly higher than when they first listed in 2020, right? So it's not that it hasn't been impacted by the Adore controversy, but I think what it has actually shown, it's raised doubts among investors about the sustainability of HYBE's multi-label system, because that system relies on fostering competition amongst the different subsidiaries while maintaining centralized control. So I think if anything, it's raised doubts about the system, but I don't think it's dramatically impacted the stock price per se in the long term, right? Even if it's had like certain days that things have gone up and down, but overall it hasn't.
Yeah, I actually think that it might have raised doubts for investors of other entertainment companies more than investors in HYBE. So like investors who are looking at really small independent labels, they're more worried about the future of their artist contracts because of the situation with the door and with NewJeans now declaring their contract terminated like unilaterally. So like if because HYBE is big, because they have a multi-label system, they're insulated a bit from the damage that comes from that kind of action. But if it happened at a smaller company where that might be their only artist or their only artist that's making revenue, it can destroy that company's value overnight and like essentially kill off that company or have severe damages that would be very long lasting. So I think it's really kind of brought a reckoning to the K-pop industry more so than it has brought to HYBE, actually, I think. And of course, I think like it would really take a lot of time to go through like the full controversy. And I don't, you know, it doesn't really kind of align with what the discussion that we're having today is. But and I don't want to get too far off topic, but like when you think about how this conflict between Minhyejin and HYBE and Adore and NewJeans, like Cal said, like it really drove stock prices down. They dropped by like 4% following the kind of start of this dispute. Actually, last year in September, like the investments in securities, people who evaluate kind of the performance of HYBE and they make a kind of, they forecast like what they think are going to be the revenues that HYBE brings in. They actually stopped evaluating Adore's contributions to HYBE last September because of the severity of this conflict in Adore. And so they actually, because like they were like, well, you know, we're going to be conservative about what we're going to estimate that HYBE is worth. And the worst case scenario is that NewJeans is not active in the future. And so they actually kind of stopped using any Adore profits in their forecasting for HYBE. And they did show, you know, decreases in sales and operating profit by billions of won in both. So the upside is, though, that because HYBE has a multi-label system and with strong sales from groups across their system, too, it's like not all the strong selling groups are in one label, especially since BTS has gone to the military. They have worked hard to make sure that their other groups are profitable, and that's been working well. But then you also add in like their community platforms like Weverse, you know, all of those diversifications have really helped keep the HYBE's value strong, even despite this conflict with Adore and Minhyejin. And so that kind of, I think, you know, even though by cutting out Adore from those kind of evaluations, and then they did show us the kind of losses from that, the HYBE was still going strong. And so I think that kind of calmed a lot of investors' worries. Mm-hmm. And actually after that, where they published that report, the stock price started going up again immediately after that. So it really kind of calmed investor worries. And then, of course, Jin was already back and Hobi was about to return. And so those announcements, I think, kept the stocks going back up.
Yeah, I think it also shows why it was so smart that they did that, right? Because they probably saw the writing on the wall before it happened. So they're like, cut them out, because if it continued going the way that it's going, even now, right? With, you know, obviously we're not talking fully about the Adore and NewJeans controversy, but, you know, NewJeans has now set up their own group. Like they're, you know, performing in China, like all this stuff that would have had such a long-term impact on investor confidence. Not necessarily, it was an investor confidence in HYBE's leadership, right? So if HYBE is making the leadership decision to cut Adore out and cut them out of like what their earnings look like, that is a smart decision. And that will actually renew investor confidence and things like this. So it really kind of feeds into like how the price generally and how from a public perspective, the perception is in some ways it even improved to what Sam was saying.
Yeah, it kind of shows that the investors can trust HYBE to do what needs to be done. Yeah, mm-hmm. To just make sure that they're protected. So next, I really want to get into Hybe's public perception. And this is where a part of the episode, there's a lot of gray area here because it is all about perception and how we perceive the company and how other fans of other K-pop groups see the company, because there's a lot of difference of opinion and obviously perception. I have known that people can dislike the acquisition of so many other labels. There's a lot of mixed feelings of fans from other groups, such as my friend. He's a strong fan of GFriend. And once they got acquired by Hybe, they disbanded. And so there's also situations too with Fromis 9 and how they recently announced that they aren't going to be renewing their contracts. And I could definitely see how if you're a fan of some other groups that then become acquired by Hybe, and then something like that happens, or just knowing that that has happened, you could be maybe a little nervous or weary about what this means for your group at this point. So if you're not a fan of one of the groups, I could see how it'd be very easy to be resentful towards Hybe or feel competitive towards them.
But also to say that those things could have happened, whether or not those groups were acquired by Hybe and their labels were acquired. They could have disbanded regardless, or they could have chosen to not renew their contracts regardless. But it is where it gets a little sticky there for people who aren't Hybe stans, who don't only like Hybe groups, to really enjoy groups from Hybe because they do have that little bit of a sour taste in their mouth. There's also a lot of ARMYs that see the drive of the company appealing to Western audiences as a negative thing. I know Bethany and I have struggled with this at times, like the whole Permission to Dance era. Just really, I mean, we really struggled with that whole, we felt like it wasn't authentic to BTS. It just wasn't what we fell in love with. And, you know, if you love K-pop, like RM even said, like, you can't take the K out of K-pop. Like, you need the Korean influence of it. You need the visuals, the lyrics, the, you know, everything coming together. And so sometimes to someone like me, who's not like super in the business world or very much into like the stocks and everything, which is really interesting. I love seeing the drive of them. But from the outside, it can feel like the expansion of Hybe isn't a virtuous prospect, and it could come off as greedy if you're not knowledgeable about the business world of K-pop and what you guys have taught us and shared with us today, where it's like, okay, the decisions they're making makes a lot of sense. It's smart, the choices that they're doing to propel the company, to diversify their profits. But sometimes you're like, man, you know, you feel nostalgic for that old big hit feeling that, of course, you know, we can't get back to. They've grown far beyond that at this point. However, with this, you know, like Cals, you've already said, like, you have a lot of respect for Bang PD as a CEO and how innovative he is. You know, Big Hit and now Hybe have always had a countercultural approach that's really worth lauding. They're innovative. They've always looked to fulfill a space within the market. That's what they originally did with BTS, making the type of group that they are, how BTS expanded in the HYYH era to really reflect like their own personal struggles and problems in such a beautiful blend of vocalists and rap at the same time. This is fulfilling a space in the market that wasn't there. And not only do they do it successfully, but they do it before anyone else does. They're really planning ahead and they think about all of the details and the nuances from start to finish. Something else innovative was that they chose to have that different trainee model than other companies, like Cal's mentioned earlier, of having a mentorship program, not just teaching them how to sing and dance and training them up there, but bringing in mentors and also working with mental health professionals and teaching them how to be a whole person that can be successful and support themselves, as opposed to just like a piece in the whole system. And another thing that always set them apart was that Bang Shiguk always wanted that artist involvement in the music creation process, giving them their own voice instead of just directing and managing them. And that's something that we love with BTS. And that's something that we continue to see with BTS, especially here, like their solo work that they put out, we talked about earlier, was all so authentically them and wildly successful because of that. And I think that's something that makes HYBE really special, that no matter how much they've grown and changed and expanded as a company, I think at their core, they still have that desire to really center the artist and to really lift up the artist's voice, which is not something that you always see in the music industry.
Yeah, and I think that was probably one of the major concerns of the growth of HYBE and the expansion of HYBE, is that BTS would somehow lose that opinion or just that artistry where they get to have more of a say in what they're doing. But in today's episode, with everything you guys have shared with us, it seems like that really is not the case. You know, they all have some kinds of shares in HYBE. They all have, you know, these voting rights too, and that they've been really adamant about their contracts and making sure that they get the accolades that they deserve and that they continue to be strong voices within the company. So yeah, I know that there's definitely some public image stuff going on, but truthfully, it seems like by the end of this episode, I have felt like HYBE really is more innovative than I had anticipated that they were. They really have grown and continue to grow and seek different routes than what other K-pop companies have been doing up to this point. Another point that is really interesting is just on the employee side of HYBE and how, Sam, you kind of educated us on this about how they have more of a, they have some of the best payment structure in terms of K-pop companies. They are known for being good to their employees and their employment practices. They have really great benefits, maternity leave, reimbursement. So Sam, I don't know if you have anything else you'd like to add about just how they treat their employees at HYBE.
They want to foster a good employment structure within HYBE to help support their artists and their growth in all areas. Recently, actually last year, they were named one of the 2024 top enterprises for job creation in South Korea, which is an annual initiative that recognizes 100 companies that excel in creating quality jobs and improving work environments. And so this was like a huge award for them to receive. They get many benefits for winning this award too, like tax incentives, expedited immigration processing, deferred audits, and then also preferential credit evaluation. So that was like super big for them to win this award, because they have been trying to like create a lot of jobs in Korea and everything. And they really do, I think, like even if you see in behind the scenes content from artists that you like they show a lot of their employees and like they show the offices and stuff like that. So I think obviously as fans, we're always interested in what that would be like, but it's nice to know that they do have like really strong benefit packages, maternity leave, stuff like that. That makes you feel better about, you know, your artists being there at that kind of company. Of course, like everything else in the last year, there was a little bit of controversy with this because of the whole Adore NewJeans situation. I guess Hani of NewJeans like claimed workplace bullying last year and took it even all the way up to the National Assembly. And because of that, HYBE was actually investigated for labor law violations, which would have put this award in jeopardy. They were cleared and the investigations found no violations. So they are still kind of considered one of those top 100 companies. But it definitely kind of put a stain on perception of the company in the public as well, even though by all accounts and by employee accounts, it seems like a good place to work.
Wow, that is fascinating. I did not know that Hani had did that. So just all the NewJeans stuff is just super, super curious about all of HYBE and the relations with HYBE.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I think it really goes along with that, with it being such a big company and so many groups underneath it, so many fans of these groups, you know, having opinions about the company too, and all of the discourse that can happen online about it, it really does make a lot of gray area there, where we're seeing HYBE is not just like this big, bad, evil company. You know, they really make a lot of smart choices, a lot of business choices, but a lot of choices that are meant to uphold the fans or uphold the artists too. And when controversies like that can come up, it can be really difficult to navigate both as a fan and where your supports kind of lie, but then also as a company too. The last topic that I'm really wanting to touch on is the communication between fans and artists that continue, because we know that with Big Hit, when they started, something that made them unique is that they originally wanted to foster that direct communication between fans and artists. BTS, before they debuted, they did like YouTube lives and, you know, they did like the BTS log. And that was something that really, as like an ARMY, no matter when you join the fandom, you could go back and find those videos and like see who they were from the very beginning and get to know their personality. You know, it was without a paywall, all free on YouTube, super accessible, and it created more authenticity and connection with BTS being themselves. It was a really frictionless communication channel. And that's something that we've always enjoyed. And that's something that we felt like HYBE was maintaining throughout their growth. You know, they want that direct relationship between fans and artists. That's what can keep us feeling so connected. But HYBE has changed it a little bit since. I think this is part of their diversifying profits and finding ways to continue to bring in revenue despite BTS being in the military. They now have some paywalls in Weverse. Sam, you've shared with us that they have ads before every video now, even when you join a live, and artists even have to watch those ads when they join their own lives to be able to see the comments. So this is just a little bit of a different change in the artist to fan communication, but it's still there in some way.
Yeah, I definitely think the ads are like one of the biggest things, because like now when you go to click to join one of their lives, that, you know, you get the notification and you're all excited, and then you have to watch an ad for however many seconds it is. Sometimes you can skip it, but sometimes you can't, so it can be really frustrating. They also have ads like when you look at your notifications, so you see like ads to download at other apps and stuff like that, which I found really jarring. And then now they offer digital memberships, which are different from like your fan club memberships that offer you other perks, but now you can have a digital membership, which gives you Weverse benefits like real-time AI translations. It gets rid of those ads, so you don't have to watch them. And then also now they've just added where you can change the app icon on your phone. So like, I just thought that was really interesting. Like they're trying to add like more benefits to this Weverse membership now. And then of course they're rolling out like direct messaging to artists. So this is not available for every artist. I'm pretty sure BTS is not enrolled in this yet. I don't know if they ever will be, but quite a few other HYBE groups are. And then, of course, other artists that use Weverse have this available too, where you can like DM members of a group you follow. But of course, you have to pay a certain amount of money every month to be able to have that feature. But the DM is, I think, one of the most interesting ones for changing how you communicate like with your favorite artists, because, you know, people are paying maybe $5 a month, maybe a little bit less per member to talk, like to DM that member. So it's not like an actual DM, but the member can send out like messages that are just for people in that service. And they can send special photos, videos, voice recordings that only get sent to the people who pay into that system. And now like what I'm seeing with groups that have the DM service enabled for them, they post less on the just like Weverse that's accessible to everyone. And it definitely changes kind of that perception of how you interact with your favorite artists and things. And it almost like kind of monetizes that interaction in a way that can be a little bit off-putting.
Yeah. And we talked a lot about at the beginning of Big Hit and their origins is that we had this parasocial relationship, which led to a lot of the success. I know that Bang PD has talked a lot about just having that parasocial relationship and the impact of social and them doing those vlogs and how much that really grew the fandom because we felt the connection with them. So I suppose there's a little bit of distaste in our mouths now that we are seeing that they're profiting off of it now, that they've created a sense of something that you have to buy into, that that relationship isn't just there, that it's something you have to pay for. The result of this is that it erodes that authenticity of the relationship between the fans and the artists. It's very different from the earlier days of BTS when it was just there for free and you would join their VLive at the time and type a comment and they'd respond to you. So very different. Wow. We really want to wrap up this episode. This has been so incredible. We feel like you two are just where you were the best guests to possibly have. You both are a wealth of information and we could not have done a Hive episode without you two. So let's kind of just go over some of our general thoughts here, Kayla.
Yeah, so throughout this episode, we've learned that there's a really complex relationship between Hybe, its development, and the artists and fan support along with it. Hybe is doing a lot of different things, and those things are really successful for them as a company. They're not to be like really, they're not doing things to be villainous or to, you know, to harm anyone, but they are making smart business moves that are going to enable the longevity of the company's growth over time. It's very fun to see how the artists continue to work within that. And it's important that fans have the discernment of what Hybe is doing so that we can continue to support or choose not to support, because we feel very invested in Hybe as a company because of the groups that we love that are underneath them. So it makes sense that we were so invested in this topic, but it's incredibly nuanced. There's so much more that we could say. I'm sure so much more that Cals and Sam could tell us about the nuances of the company as well. But just to kind of wrap it up, we're really interested for you guys, just a couple questions, answer them however you would like to. But if you were running Hybe, where would you invest your time or attention? Or as a fan, what would you like to see the change within Hybe's current projection?
I think that like it's real easy to get caught up in like the negative aspects when we've transitioned from Big Hit into Hybe. I do think that through this discussion, we've seen that there's a lot of positive aspects as well. And I think most importantly, the most positive aspect is that Hybe is still super young. You know, I think it's hard to disentangle the fact that like Hybe really only started, you know, a handful of years ago. It feels like it's been around for a long time, but they're still young and they're still learning too. So I think that like we can be optimistic about like how they're going to move forward with these things. I think as a fan myself of groups under Hybe, I really would love Hybe to find a way to work out like some of the clunky aspects that we've seen with having many different groups under separate labels, especially like with release scheduling, how groups are promoted with the PR releases for Hybe as a corporation, handling of social media, things like that, that I think are not super smooth yet. I think that a lot of the issues with those can be addressed though, like that's a solvable problem. And I think like if Hybe focuses on that, it could also ease tensions between fandoms, you know, amongst groups like in their labels. And it might make it easier for fans too, who like multiple groups under Hybe's labels, like to be able to support multiple groups in a way where it feels like feasible as a fan too. So I think I would love Hybe to focus on that.
I think for me, it's so interesting, right? Because I looked at this from the lens of, you know, when I put my business hat on when I did research for this episode, and it's hard for me to separate me as a fan, and I really had to for this. So there's a lot of things I can respect about Hybe and Bang PD and what they've done. And what they've achieved in such a short amount of time, right? It's nothing short of extraordinary. And at the same time, as a fan, I really do feel a lot of distaste, honestly, with the way that certain things have been executed. Because even though, like, we can actually say they have made smart business decisions, there has been a cost to those business decisions, right? It means that certain things like, you know, Bethany, you were talking about authenticity, things that drew us to the groups that we love so much, authenticity, connection, community, all of those things seem to always break down when companies are focused purely on their bottom line, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. A company is public. They have to do that. They have to be able to, you know, they're a public company and a publicly traded company. That's what they have to do. So if I were them, what I would love to see as someone who is a fan and who's been a fan for 5 years and not just a BTS, but of other groups and a lot of other groups under the Hybe label, I would love to see a commitment to real authenticity and not ones that is, you know, fabricated authenticity of like saying you can create, you can send DMs, but those DMs you have to pay for and they have to be read through by other people, right? That doesn't create, whoever said that that was a good idea should be fired, because that is not a great idea of how to actually create a sense of real connection between fan and artist, right? And if you kind of go back to the brass tacks of what these guys started to do, go back to that, because I think that's what's important here. If you want to continue to have that same kind of thread and that same kind of foundation of why this company got to be as big as they were on the backs of BTS, but also on the backs of ARMY, right? Like you should actually be able to appeal to that more. So for me, it's hard because I can hold those two things as true. They are a company that is genuinely someone that I can, a company that I genuinely admire, and at the same time, one that I really feel have a lot to work on when it comes to some of the things that I would like to see as a fan.
I love your guys' thoughts. Like, I hope HYBE is listening to this episode and that they've listened to the end so they can hear these reforms, because I think that they would do so well. Like, I really don't want them to lose the authenticity of that fan and artist connection. And I don't want them to, like, engineer it either in such a way. So I really, really would enjoy to see that change come here in the future.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I really do feel that as they continue to grow, that they don't lose sight of just the origins. You know, they cared about their artists, the well-being of the artists, looking at their mental health and promoting them being creative and doing what they want to do as artists. I hope they never lose sight of that as they continue to grow. All of you listening, I really want you guys to, if you're listening on Spotify, you know, go into the comments and tell us what you would want to do. Like, if you were running HYBE, what you would want to invest your time and attention into, and what you would like to see change with HYBE's like current projection. I think it's super interesting to hear ARMY's perspective on this. Thank you, Sam and Kels, again, so much for being a part of this episode. Like I said, we couldn't have done it without you. You both have just brought so much wonderful information that we would have never found on our own, truthfully. So thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. And we do want to say a special thanks to our supporters on Patreon, especially the VIPs, Eileen, Michelle, Holly, Meg, Rachel, Robin, and Deja. Thank you all so much for listening and listening to the end on this big expose of HYBE. If you enjoyed this episode, please let us know. You can write us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And of course, you can find links for all of the things in the description.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for standing BTS.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.